As I've been doing these podcasts for the past year and a half, I want to be a little vulnerable with you here and tell you some of the experiences as I'm working through these ideas of agency, of mindfulness, of free will and choice, and the wrestle that I've had in doing this. It's extremely painful for me to do podcasts because I have such a negative voice or a myriad of negative voices or feelings that come to me. You can't do a podcast. You're not articulate enough. You don't make sense. Why would anyone listen to anything that you have to say? See, I wrestle with these things and it's like, ugh. And so I wonder, where does that come from? What am I carrying with me from my childhood or from transgenerational trauma? I know some stories of my mother. She carried this with her and she told me that she was shamed by a teacher as a young girl. Stood her up in front of the class and said, because she couldn't do a math problem, and said, "Class, this has got to be the dumbest girl I've ever seen." Or that's a story my mom told me. Whether that actually happened exactly like that, but that was the interpretation of my mom. And so she grew up with this inferiority complex, and yet she was the kindest, best mother for me, but always had this feeling that she wasn't good enough. Carrying that with her. So I was carried in her as a child. So I look at my life, I look at my experiences, and I've never had any, my life has been completely different. I have had so many amazing experiences, wonderful experiences of being successful in pretty much most things I set my mind to do. And yet there's powerful underlying feeling is I'm not good enough. I'm not smart enough. I don't understand. And honestly, from my experiences, I look back on my life, when I don't understand something, it's because I have no interest in it. It's not because I'm not intelligent enough to understand it. And yet this deep brooding feeling of overwhelming, oh, you're not good enough. So the idea of doing podcasts, I've wrestled with that. Or creating a website, or reaching out to Tony, who manages my website. I reached out to him a couple of years ago and says, I just have this feeling. So I wrestle with these two sides of myself. I just want to give back. Let's create something. Some of the things I've learned from the clients that I've worked with through the years, I believe there's some things that are helpful because they're constantly telling me that. Why don't you put this stuff in a book? Like that's why I wrote Language of Recovery or the book Recovery Simplified. This stuff is so helpful. Because I've had so many experiences of people coming to me and said, why isn't everybody using kind of these principles? And I go, just the fact that someone would say this is really helpful, or even four or five people saying this material has literally altered the course of my life and has helped me, that's enough for me. And so I want to be able to give back, but still at the same time, I wrestle with this overwhelming feeling of anything to keep me away from clicking on and doing this podcast. And like every single one of these podcasts, I don't even know how many we have up now, 60, 70, I've just had to sit down and through the power of will, and maybe it comes across clearly that I'm struggling in some of the podcasts, but there's a part of me that is willing to do that, to be vulnerable, because you just, I got to keep working on it, got to keep striving. Striving to pay attention to can-do thoughts. No, I can do this. And then just kind of, chill a little bit with a healthy sense of humor, not take myself too seriously. And I'm not a victim of anything. Even if I carry some of my past trauma from my mom and my ancestors, I'm trying to acknowledge it and work through some of the things that I've, some of the stories I've heard of them, some hard things. Just as the same as you in your life, I'm sure we all have those things. and tending to use my agency to focus on what I can do and just get engaged in doing something, even if it's not perfect, because it never will be. Just move, do something, act, strive to create something in a positive way. So according to William James, the father of psychology, listen to a couple of things he said. But the amount of attention an object or thought receives after it has caught our mental eye is another question. So again, back to, I have a thought, an impression. Now do a podcast. You can make a difference to somebody. Someone's looking for some answers that you might have. That thought pops into my mind, and then I'm barraged by a number of what I call enemy thoughts. You can't do that. You're going to be embarrassed before people. You're not smart enough to do this thing. Anyway, so back to James. It often takes effort to keep our mind upon the particular thought. We feel that we can make more or less an effort as we choose. I'm gonna do a podcast for me. I'm gonna do this thing. And then James says, if this feeling be not deceptive, then of course effort contributes co-equally with the cerebral conditions to the result. Though it introduce no new idea, it will deepen and prolong the stay in consciousness of innumerable ideas, which else would fade more quickly away. Sorry, that was pretty wordy. But it just means that when you're trying to stay focused on a particular thought or course of action, you have a bunch of other thoughts that are coming to try to take you out of that course of action. It is often a matter of but a second, more or less, of attention at the outset, whether one system shall gain force to occupy the field and develop itself and exclude the other, or be excluded itself by the other. The whole drama of voluntary life hinges on the amount of attention, slightly less, which rival motor ideas may receive. Effort, now this is really interesting. Effort may be an original force and not a mere effect, and it may be indeterminate in amount. So when he says effort may be an original force, the very existence of us as individual, this idea of mental force, is that notwithstanding what has happened to me in my life, notwithstanding the experiences I have had in my life, I accept the fact that they have imprinted me to behave certain ways and think certain ways, but there is something else inside me that supersedes all this hard wiring, that if I can tap into this, I can change and become a different person than I am. I can change some of the things that I want to change in my life. And this goes back to the principle of agency or faith. Now listen to this. I just love this statement one individual made about faith. He said, faith, we're not sure what it is, but I believe it's the intelligent force in the universe that causes things to happen. Faith, an original intelligent force in the universe that causes things to happen. When we tap into it, then it can begin the creation process. And remember that faith is the substance of things hoped for or seen in the mental picture of the brain and not in the physical world yet. that we are all in the process of creating. And so again, it goes back to life is a matter of attention. And to focus attention on one idea, one possible course of action among the many bubbling up in our consciousness is precisely what we mean by the act of volition or mental force or mental focus, mental energy, mental exertion. And the number of books also that I've read of what athletes do, not just athletes, but they practice visual imagery in their mind as they create in their mind's eye what they want to achieve in the physical world. And they picture it in such vivid detail that they actually, their brain, it's wired as if it actually happened. You see, the brain cannot tell the difference between thoughts that are repeatedly and vividly imagined and something that actually transpires. So that's why we have to be so careful of what we fantasize about, of what are we allowing to take our attention, and why conscious attention, especially on what we want to become, as we're striving to create ourselves through positive affirmations over and over again, given attention to certain thoughts and feelings that we create inside of ourselves, then we become creators. But unless we become aware of what we are thinking moment by moment, we basically go into automatic mode. And as has been highly researched, we have, according to the limbic regions of the brain, have a negativity bias. That means generally we are looking for negative things, things that confront us, that might threaten our survival. And so to think positive, creative things, almost obsessive thoughts, are necessary to create things. So look at those people who have made a tremendous difference in the world. I'm thinking of Phil Knight in his book, Shoe Dog. I read that book, his autobiography. And you know why he succeeded in creating shoes? He was just obsessed with it. He was obsessed with the idea, and it didn't matter whatever distractions came his way. He was obsessed with shoes. There were 1,000 distractions. There were so many different things that wanted to destroy any reality of him creating Nike. But he was obsessed with it. You look at Steve Jobs and Apple Computer and what he created. You know why he created? He was obsessed with it. He was obsessed with it. He had this thing around him called, people called it the reality distortion field. It said he came into a room and he says, okay, I want this to happen in X amount of time. And people go, well, it's impossible to do that. And he would just say, do it. And his energy was so powerful because his thoughts and faith were so powerful, it actually created things. He influenced other people to actually change their behaviors and accomplish things that they thought were impossible. That's amazing. That's amazing to me. But if you really think of these people, and those are just a couple of stories, check into other stories of people that you admire, and I think you'll just find the same thing. They were able to keep their thoughts focused or attention focused on a certain train of accomplishing a particular thing. And and you think of Michelangelo, painting the Sistine Chapel. And he's basically saying the same thing, right? It's up to individual. He said, every block of stone has a statue inside of it, but it's up to the sculptor to find it. And then he also said, if people knew how hard I had to work to gain my mastery, they would not think it so wonderful at all. It was this attention that helped him create. So we go look at the Sistine Chapel. There's a picture of, oh my gosh, this guy is absolutely amazing. And he would say, it's because I worked super, super hard. My attention was on this and I let everything else drift by the wayside until I created this work. So the question is, then what can you become? What can I become if we choose through our own given, you know, God-given gift of agency to become whatever it is we desire or create whatever we want to create? It simply boils down to how much attention can you give to it and how long can you stay on that train? And when you get off the train and allow your mind to rest, can you just keep the train in the train station so that when you choose to get back on that train, a certain train of thought, that you hop right back on that train and then you keep going the next day? Because, you know, we do need to rest once in a while, so you do need to allow yourself to calm down. There does seem to be a period of time when, you know, we can't stay 100% engaged all the time. We need to sleep every night. But at least getting our train of thought in alignment with our overall values and just understanding and accepting the reality of how susceptible we are to be distracted into wandering roads. So, just thoughts to ponder on. Again, you know, as I'm wrapping up this podcast, I have the voice coming, well, you're not really leaving them with anything. Give them something specific to do. I go, you know what? I don't have all the answers. But just hang on to this one thought. Whatever you give the most attention to for the longest period of time, that is what you will begin to change towards or manifest in the world. It's in direct proportion to prolonged mental effort and exertion, being patient in the process, realizing that things do take time, but just having faith that what you truly desire in time, if you don't get too unhinged by it's not working out as fast as you want it to, just be patient, but be focused on your effort. And especially if you're struggling with addiction issues, before acting on the behavior, stop. Realize that you absolutely 100% have the power within you to refrain from an act, a free won't. And to refrain from an act is no less an act than to commitment, and to commit one, right? And again, as I've mentioned in these podcasts, a couple of my favorite all-time quotes, and then I'll end this podcast. Thucydides, Greek general, philosopher, of all manifestations of power, restraint impresses men the most, meaning no free won't. I will not do this thing. Marcus Aurelius, one of the greatest, most powerful men at the particular time, the Roman emperor, right? Pleasures, when unrestrained, become punishments. We cannot just do whatever we want to do and find peace within our souls. However, whatever creative process created us, I have experienced in my life that those who binge and indulge in all the pleasures of the world are the most miserable of human beings. They struggle and they suffer and they don't know what to do, but keep doing more and more and more and more and more of it, trying to absolve themselves of feeling pain, and it just creates more pain. The way to free yourself from pain is to restrain from the activities that are really causing it. Look into your own life, examine yourself, trust that you have an awareness piece that can let you know exactly what you need to do with your intuition. And I believe you'll find it. Okay, carry on.